Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
True Hauntings is a Human Labs original podcast.
Guests have reported hearing footsteps on the stairs, the sounds of children playing, and a grand piano that inexplicably repeats the same haunting chord over and over again until someone enters the room. You may not get the best night's sleep at this B&B, but sure to be a memorable experience.
The Majols Plantation is recognised as one of the most haunted houses in America, according to the National Geographic. Would you dare to stay the night? Join us in this week's episode as we explore the ghost stories surrounding Louisiana's infamous Myrtle's Plantation. Hi, my name's Renata Daniel.
And I'm Anne Rekovich, and welcome to this week's episode where we head back to the USA for one of the famous ghost stories and ghost houses. I'm excited to do this one.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow, forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
I'm glad you're excited, Anne.
I know. It doesn't take much these days, I tell you, with the lockdown situation. Yeah. You know, I get a little bit of, you know, something different. I walk out the front yard, I touch the letterbox, I go, woohoo! Geez, that was a thrill. How's your week been, Renata?
Oh, well, look, I have been busy. I've been doing bits and pieces, and we're really overloaded at the moment with looking for great ghost stories.
Yeah, so anyone's got some ghost stories, just like little shortish sort of ones. We've got so many live shows that we're doing at the moment. We've got our Spooky Sundays. We've mm-hmm. got the ABC of Paranormal Strangeness on Paranormal United Network. We've got Supernatural Stories yep. on Spirit Realm Network. Mm-hmm. So we are in need of news stories, and we are in need of spooky stories or yes. weird stories.
Yes. Yes. We actually did a calculation earlier this week mm-hmm. and we need 540 stories for the next 12 months.
Okay.
No pressure.
Is that 10 a week or something?
Yeah, more or less. No pressure.
No pressure. All right.
We'll get there.
So this one was a little bit of a heartbreak, and I had put off doing this one for a while because we were meant to go there last year
yes.
with a big group of crazy Aussies, and we had booked in to stay the night, and we'd booked the various rooms of importance at Myrtle's so that we could explore them at will, and some of those rooms were quite expensive for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bucket list, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a full NOLA experience.
It was.
We were going away for, about 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And, maybe 2 weeks. And we had lots of things organized for New Orleans itself. We had tours.
Say it right. New Orleans.
All right. New Orleans. And we had tours.
We had a cocktail tour that Christy had put us up to, which we would have done a live feed from. So you would have been able to see us as we traversed.
Oh, we had a Bloody Mary's tour. We had a seance.
We had a seance that was going to be sitting at Bloody Mary's table.
Oh, all of these wonderful things. A cemetery walk, all of those, and shopping.
And shopping.
And
eating.
And eating.
And maybe a little bit of drinking, but not, you and I have sort of passed that stage. Yeah. We're too old for that poop.
Yeah, yeah. We would have let the young'uns do that and just recorded them.
Yeah, take photos.
Because that's what you do.
Was there any young'uns on our trip? Oh, we actually did have someone who was in their 20s. That's young for us.
Did we? Who?
Yeah. Someone's daughter was coming with us.
Okay, all right.
Anyway.
But never mind. That's not happening. But this October, in a couple of weeks' time,
we have
placed our names down to do a walk for mental health.
The Black Dog Institute, is that right?
Yeah, Black Dog Institute, and it's called One Foot Forward. And it is committing yourself to walk a certain amount of kilometres in the month of October, and you can get sponsors.
Yes.
So we are doing this.
Yes, and we're doing it as a team, mm-hmm. And we've committed as a team to walk 60 kilometres. Oh, lordy me. Now, look, just so people understand, we've been in lockdown for months and months and months, and I've walked from the fridge to my couch, maybe to the bathroom and to the bedroom.
That's true.
That's about it. Mm-hmm. So we've now committed to walk 2 kilometres a day, mm-hmm. A kilometre each, mm-hmm. Which may kill us.
It may, but it's for a good cause.
It is
for a good cause.
And I am doing it because it is such a good cause. And even last week, I very rarely get a touch of the Black Dog, but I did. Mm. I went down for 2 days and it was horrible. I can't imagine what it's like living with it.
It's awful. And for the carers and for the families that are watching someone with this awful illness and trying desperately to help them and not knowing how to. So this is a cause that really needs a lot of support. We are going to put up the link for our registration, One Foot Forward, for the Black Dog Institute on the True Hauntings Facebook page. If you would like to donate any money and sponsor us, it is all really gladly accepted.
We accept donations, big and small. Anything you can spare would be appreciated. All right, I think we need to get on with the show.
Let's go for it.
First, let me say that this was truly an amazing experience. Me and my boyfriend stayed here a few months back, in the beginning of September, right after Labor Day. It was a spontaneous trip as we were road tripping through the southern US and both have a love for the paranormal. We found the recommendation for this place online through a number of different websites and decided to take the plunge. The staff was incredible. We had an amazing tour with Abby, creepy and informative, allowed us to explore the grounds unchecked, and when we needed them, they were there to answer any questions we might have. That is until the shifts end and the night begins. We were the only people staying overnight in addition to one other couple, coincidentally stationed right next door to our Oleander room. After most of the staff head out, we stumbled to the bar to exchange stories with one another and the amazing bartender who served us and the owner of the plantation, drinks until we were ready to leave. After exchanging numerous stories, the four of us set out on a night of ghost hunting. See, the couple that we were staying with, this is a few months back now, were amateur ghost hunters with electromagnetic gadgets and whatnots. We roamed the outskirts of the grounds without anyone to stop us, taking readings and pictures and whatever we could. At some point, Tasha showed us a series of pictures she had taken from the front of the plantation. In one of the front windows was clouded by something, I don't know. It looked different from the other front house pictures. At the time, I thought nothing about it. It was a fun night, but uneventful night, beside the fact that we had met two amazing people. But here's the thing. I never get nightmares. Not ever. Since the night terrors of my childhood, I haven't experienced a single nightmare while I sleep. Ever. But while I was staying here, I had incredibly disruptive dreams. A dream I was living forever and stuck in the fabric of time in this plantation, every day repeating at 3:22 to 3:24 a.m. A dream that I had lived my entire life with children and grandchildren, only to learn that one night at 3:24, it all reversed back to this one night at the plantation. Every time it struck that hour, I awoke in a cold sweat, something I have never really done before. In one of these lifetimes, I was embraced by a little girl with flying curly hair. The little girl that died of typhoid? She wasn't explicitly redhead. Who was so afraid and wanted to get me away from something, followed by a boy beckoning me by the outside porch near the game room. After every one of these dreams, I would wake up gasping for breath and feeling quite uneasy, which, as I said before, is quite unlike me. I'm a goddamn amazing sleeper. We woke up the next morning to Tasha showing some employees the photos she had taken the night before, and lo and behold, the one with the strange form in the front window she had taken the night before were almost as good a quality as the postcards that were selling out the front with the ghost of the little girl standing in the window. So all in all, this was, I believe, a haunted place that I have stayed at. The staff were really amazing. If you are ghost curious, then you should be kind of ecstatic that most of the staff leaves for the night. And wow, Hester, this woman is the epitome of Southern hospitality. I almost didn't want to leave. And our soundscape today comes from TripAdvisor, would you believe? That was Korak 118 wrote a review back in January 2016. She had a fantastic experience, but she's a damn good sleeper, apparently. She was very adamant. She had to tell everyone what a great sleeper she was.
I've never used a whatnot.
Haven't you?
Oh,
you don't know
talk.
What you're missing in life.
Do you sell whatnots?
Oh, I do, but they're very expensive. You can't afford them.
Obviously.
They take batteries that you can't find anymore.
Yeah, that'd be right. The whatnot battery.
Yeah, and for all your Ozparatech needs, for all your ghost hunting equipment in Australia, head to ozparatech.com. That's OZPARATECH. I will take any opportunity to have a plug.
Absolutely. Let's go for it. Now, I'm going to dip a little bit into the history of myrtles. And I found this very hard and difficult.
Why?
Because the stories kind of weave in and out, and a lot of – I found a lot of sites that embellished a lot.
Oh, really? Fancy that.
And, yeah, it was more like a storytelling rather than just the factual part of it. And so – I wrote things and then I went, no, that's no good. It doesn't make sense to me, so it won't make sense to anyone that's listening. Mm-hmm. And I went for something that I actually found last night. So all my notes went out the window and so, I started over.
So this is the same ones you sent to me and said, have you seen this?
Yes.
And I went, don't you steal that, that's mine.
I started again. And this is sometimes what happens when we do these things. We go over notes and over notes and then we go, that's just crap, and we start over.
Yep.
So the Myrtles Plantation was actually constructed by a gentleman called David Bradford all the way back in 1794. That's about the very first years that Australia was...
1776 was discovered?
Well, it's always been here, but... By Captain Cook.
Oh my god.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, it just went, oh, and it just appeared. It was never there before.
Yeah, it's never been there.
Shall I say Australia was discovered by the disruptive white man?
Yeah. Right.
Meanwhile, reset, go again.
1794. And since that time has allegedly, it's been the scene of 10 murders at least.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that?
I did.
So Bradford was...
So much death.
I know.
Violence.
Yep. Oh, boy. So Bradford was actually one of five children born to Irish immigrants in America. And in 1777, he actually purchased a tract of land and a small stone house near Washington County, Pennsylvania. Now, he became a successful attorney and a businessman and Deputy Attorney General for the county. And he married Elizabeth Porter in 1785, and they started a family. Now, his family and his business grew, and Bradford decided that he needed a larger home, and so he built one in the town of Washington. Now, the house became really well known in the region for its size and for the craftsmanship that went into making the house, especially with a mahogany staircase and woodwork that was imported from England. So this bloke had a bit of money.
He had a bit of dosh, huh?
Mm. And so many of the items in the house were transported from the East Coast and over the Pennsylvania mountains at great expense. That would have been a job and a half.
Yeah.
Yep. So he wanted to show his importance in the world, absolutely. And he used to use his front parlor as an office, and this is where he would meet clients. But unfortunately, he wasn't to spend an enjoyable long time in the house because in October 1794, he had to flee and leave his family behind because he became involved in the infamous Whiskey Rebellion.
Ooh.
And you know what the Whiskey Rebellion was?
Oh, it's about whiskey?
Yeah.
Oh, it must be clever.
The government was a little bit short of money and they decided to tax whiskey.
How dare they?
There was a revolt.
What's the tax on alcohol in Australia today? It's like 600% or something.
It became revolting.
Oh. Look, this is one thing I'm jealous of. You go to America, you can buy a bottle of vodka for $7. Over here, it's $70.
Yeah.
Not that I buy vodka a lot, but...
Yes. And so... He had to leave his family behind. And apparently George Washington, who was the president at the time, placed a price on his head because he had a large role in that affair. Now, after leaving Washington, Bradford first went to Pittsburgh and he eventually settled at the Bayou Sarah near what is now St. Francisville, Louisiana. He there purchased 600 acres of land, again, money, allowing him to do that. That's a fair bit of land there, and built a modest 8-room home near Baton Rouge, which he called Laurel Grove. Now, he lived there alone until 1799, and then he received a pardon for his role in the Whiskey Rebellion from the new president, John Adams. Apparently there were some favours going on there as well.
A bit of greasy palms,
yeah,
I would
so
say.
So John kind of went, you know what, I'll
just slip you a bit of this, will you let me have that?
So because of this pardon, Bradford could then bring his wife and five children back to Louisiana. He continued to take students who studied law with him, and one of them was a gentleman called Clark Woodruff. And Clark Woodruff not only earned a law degree, but also he married his teacher's daughter, Sarah Matilda. Now, Clark Woodruff, he was born in Litchfield County, Connecticut in August 1791. And his father was a farmer, but he had grander plans for himself. So he ended up in Bayou Sarah as well. He began his studies with Judge David Bradford and he earned his degree, but he also fell in love with Bradford's daughter, the lovely Sarah.
No wonder he was studying.
Mm. And so it's said that their romance blossomed under the shade of the crepe myrtle trees that reportedly gave the home its lasting name. Now, the couple were married on November the 19th, 1817. For their honeymoon, Woodruff took his new bride to the Hermitage, the Tennessee home of his friend Andrew Jackson.
Oh.
Another name drop there.
Mm-mm.
Now, after the death of David Bradford, Woodruff managed Laurel Grove for his mother-in-law, Elizabeth. He expanded the holdings of the plantation and planted about 650 acres of indigo and cotton. And so together he and Sarah had three children, Cornelia, James, and Mary Octavia. What beautiful names.
Gorgeous.
But again, their happiness was not to last. On July the 21st, 1823, Sarah Matilda died after contracting yellow fever. The disease was to spread through a number of the families and homes through Louisiana in those days, and there was hardly a family in the region where a child or someone close didn't catch the disease and die.
It sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah. So Woodruff continued to manage the plantation and to take care of his children with help from Elizabeth. On July the 15th, 1824, his only son, James, died of yellow fever.
Aww.
And 2 months later in September, Cornelia also fell to the disease.
Can you tell some happy stories, please?
No, not yet. Not yet. So Woodruff's life obviously would never be the same, but he continued to manage the farm with his mother-in-law. She was really quite getting on in age by this time and was happy to just give him all of the duties. And she continued to live at Laurel Grove with her son-in-law and granddaughter Octavia until her death in 1830. Now, after Elizabeth died, Woodruff turned his attentions away from farming and to the practice of law, and he and Octavia moved away from Laurel Grove and he left the plantation under the management of a caretaker. He was appointed to a judge's position in Louisiana, and that's kind of where he stayed. So he sold Laurel Grove to Ruffin Gray Sterling.
I love that name, Ruffin.
So the Sterlings now take over Myrtles, and they were a wealthy family. They owned several plantations on both sides of the Mississippi River. On January the 1st, Ruffin Gray Sterling and his wife, Mary Catherine Cobb, took over the house, the land, the buildings, and all of the slaves that had been bought from Elizabeth Bradford by her son-in-law. So since the Sterlings were leaders in the community, they wanted a house that befitted their social status, and they started to remodel Laurel Grove, doubling its size. And that is when it officially began to be known as the Myrtles.
Aha. Uh-huh. And I learnt very quickly that it's not Myrtles apostrophe S as in Myrtle owns it, but it's Myrtles as in the trees.
The trees. Everywhere. Yeah, the crepe myrtles, yep. So 4 years after the completion of this project, Sterling died of consumption or tuberculosis, as it was known. And see, we all get vaccinations for yes. those things now.
Yes.
We tend to forget.
Yes, we do, don't we?
Mm.
Let's just leave that there, shall we?
Yeah. Ping. And he left vast holdings in the care of his wife, Mary Cobb, who everyone kind of thought she was a little bit masculine in the way that she led things. So I dare say
it's just probably because she was good at doing what she was doing. So that was masculine.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think people liked her, but I think it was because she was quite stern.
She would have had to have been.
Yeah.
She couldn't have been anything but in that time, but appear very tough, because any sign of delicateness, she would have had somebody snatch everything away from her.
Mm-hmm. And she had to deal with all the tragedy that was coming up in her life.
Oh, and it's more miserable stories. Yep. Oh, Renata.
She had 9 children. Only 4 of them lived to be old enough to be married.
Wow.
So the oldest son, Lewis, died in the same year as his father. Daughter Sarah's husband was murdered on the front porch of the house after the Civil War. And I think there's a bit of a ghost story about that. The war wreaked havoc on the Myrtles and on the Sterling family. Many of the family's personal belongings were looted and destroyed. To make matters worse, Mary Cobb had invested heavily in sugar plantations and they had been ravaged by the war. She eventually lost all of her property and she never let the tragedies of the war and the others that followed overcome her, however, and she held desperately onto the Myrtles until her death in August 1880. Now, on December the 5th, 1865, Mary Cobb hired William Drew Winter, the husband of her daughter Sarah Mulford, to act as her agent and attorney. And eventually, he was the next one to take over Myrtles. So Mary would go on to give William the use of the Myrtles as his home. Times were pretty awful and Winter was unable to hold on to it. By December 1867, he was bankrupt and the Myrtles were sold by the US Marshal to the New York Warehouse and Security Company. Now, 2 years later, the property was sold back to Mrs. Sarah Winter as the heir of her late father, Ruffin G. Sterling. And it is unknown just what occurred to cause this reversal of fortune, but it seemed as though things were improving for the family once again. But soon after, tragedy struck again, and in 1871, Winter was teaching a Sunday school lesson in the gentleman's parlour of the house when he heard someone approach on horseback. After the stranger called out to him saying that he had some business with him, Winter went out onto the side gallery of the house and was shot. So he collapsed on the porch and died. Sarah was devastated by the incident and she never remarried. She remained at the Myrtles with her mother and brothers until her death in 1878 at the age of 44.
So she died when she was 44?
Yeah.
Wow.
So after the death of Mary Cobb Sterling in 1880, the Myrtles was purchased by Stephen Sterling, one of her sons. He bought out his brothers but only maintained ownership of the house for about 5-6 years and he went bankrupt again. He squandered the fortune, lost the plantation in playing poker. He sold Myrtles to Orrin D. Brooks and that ended his family's ownership. Brooks kept it until January 1889. And after a series of transfers, it was purchased by Harrison Milton Williams, a Mississippi widower who bought his young son and second wife, Fanny Lintott Harrelson, to the house in 1891.
That's a fabulous name.
I know.
Now, for those in America, Fanny means something very different in Australia. I know you guys have your fanny packs over there, which it's we call them bum bags, which go around your waist and you've got the little pouch in there, like a kangaroo's pouch. But in Australia, fanny means your front bottom on ladies.
Mm.
So I'll just put that nicely. Yeah, you learned something new today.
So Milton Williams actually went as in the Civil War as a 15-year-old to be a Confederate cavalry courier. So at 15, he went 15. To war. 15, yep.
So this is the 15-year-old boys think they're really tough and they think they can handle anything and then they actually face it and it's terrifying and they're destroyed for life.
Mm.
Different time back there then.
So he and his family, which grew to include 7 children, kept Myrtles going through the hard times of the post-war South. But once again,
tragedy strikes
Myrtles again. So during a storm, the Williams' oldest son, Harry, was trying to gather up some stray cattle and fell into the Mississippi and drowned.
Aww.
Shattered with grief, Harrelson and Fanny turned over management of the lost property to their son, and he married a local girl called Jessie Folks and provided a home at the Myrtles for his spinster sister and maiden aunt, Katie. Secretly called the Colonel behind her back, Katie was a true Southern character, eccentric and kind, but with a gruff exterior, and she kept life interesting at the house for years. So by the 1950s, the property surrounding the house had been divided among the Williams heirs, and the house itself was sold to Marjorie Munson, an Oklahoma widow, who had been made wealthy by chicken farms.
Yeehaw!
It was at this point, they say, that the ghost stories of the house began.
Mm-hmm.
They started innocently enough, but soon What may have been real-life ghostly occurrences took on a life of their own.
Now, don't you cross over into my territory,
see,
woman.
See, look, my notes say stop
here. It does.
Stop here.
Wow, you use a lot of ink on your printing. You've printed everything with a black background.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, and look.
You don't know how to change the setting, do you?
Actually, no, I don't. That information comes from the fabulous Troy Taylor, who has been around for ever, and is such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to information.
He's about great on his history, as
so
well.
So thank you, Troy Taylor.
And I have to say thank you to Troy Taylor as well, because I discovered I did all my notes and thinking there's just something missing. I need something more. So I typed in a few more different variations and discovered his page and went, oh, yes, bingo.
Here we go.
I like a bit of controversy.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, so I'm going to start back even further than when it was the Laurels. And apparently before it was that place, it had been previously the site of the Tunica, I don't know how to say it, T-U-N-I-C-A, native settlement, and a large portion of the land immediately adjacent to the house had been a burial ground for the original inhabitants. Now, I went digging around trying to find more information on that, can't find anything anywhere. It was only mentioned in one thing, so I can't verify that. But why is it these places are always built on a burial ground?
There's another story that I'm doing next week that also talks about a place built on a burial ground.
Yeah, I think.
But it's not.
The movie called Poltergeist.
Yes.
Anyway, and as you said, there has allegedly been 10 murders on the property.
Yes.
Place of death and horror. And again, as you said, the paranormal activity. Now, they say the activity kicked off in the 1970s, but there is reports that it goes back to the 1950s as well. But what happened in the 1970s?
Someone else bought the house?
No, Satanic Panic.
Of course.
Once again, we find a lot of these stories that we're covering go back to that time frame, and that's when the ghost stories explode.
That's true.
Because all of a sudden people are looking for them.
Yes.
Thank you, Warrens. Anyway, let me go on. So there is a very famous ghost story and a famous picture that goes with it, right? This is the ghost of Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was supposedly one of the house slaves during the Woodruff's time. And they claim that the Woodruff, the owner, was very cruel and raped his slaves and treated them poorly.
Mm-hmm.
So what Chloe used to try to do to protect herself from the abuse is that she would try to eavesdrop in on Woodruff's conversations with his family so she could change her behavior to not upset him or to tell him what he wants to hear, which is a very clever thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But she got caught eavesdropping. So he then, as punishment, disfigured her to make her look ugly so nobody else would ever want her by cutting off her ear. She used to hide that, though, by wrapping a green turban around her head so it would be down one side so you couldn't see that her ear was missing. But Chloe wasn't going to let it slip past, and she made plans for revenge. On the 9th birthday of Woodruff's daughter, Chloe placed poisonous oleander leaves in the birthday cake. Now, her plan was to poison Mrs. Woodruff and the children. She didn't want to murder them. That was not the whole idea. She actually wanted to just make them sick so she could nurse them back to health and that they would then look at her as the hero for saving their children and the wife. In the South, local healers were amongst the most respected from the community. And if Chloe could heal the family, she would be safe from harsh reality of working in the fields, because she got sent back out to work in the fields once he disfigured her.
Mm-hmm.
Tragically, though, there is tragedy. The dosage was lethal and ended up killing Mrs. Woodruff and her two children. After word spread of her actions on the plantation, the other slaves were the ones who took revenge, and they hanged Chloe by the neck for everyone to witness until the life drained from her body. She was then weighed down with rocks and thrown into the Mississippi River.
Right.
Now, a lot of this information came from hauntedwalks.com. Now, there were various stories or versions of this story, but I sort of pulled together what was the most common threads that I could get there. Now, there is a famous photograph of Chloe.
I'm just looking at my notes and it kind of doesn't fit, but anyway. Oh, don't,
shush. Back off, okay, woman. Right, this is okay, my segment. No, you've had your chance.
I'm just saying. Yeah.
She always likes to try to get in on my bits because she knows my bits are just fabulous. All right, so this photograph was actually photographs that were taken for insurance purposes. So they had to photograph the buildings and the site to show what state the buildings were in to cover them for insurance. So if anything went wrong, they could go back and say, well, this is what the building looked like to start with.
Yep.
In one of these photos, there is allegedly a ghost image of a young woman wearing a turban standing between the old plantation kitchen and the rear of Myrtle's house. Now, there is a figure there, and we'll get Christy to pop a photo of that up there on the True Hauntings page on Facebook so that you can have a look for yourself. It's blurry. It's like a shadow figure. Yes, it could look like a woman that may have a turban on, but there's certainly no details to it.
Yeah. They have had that picture scrutinized.
Yes, digitally analyzed.
Yep, and they do say that the dimensions do fit that of a human being.
Yep, and that the original photograph has not been tampered with. Yep. So it's a real photo of something. But apparently the ghost of Chloe likes to turn up on quite a few photos and likes to interact with people around Myrtle's. There's lots of photos and problems with their cameras, and a lot of the other ghosts will come and play along as well. The people find their cameras don't work, their cell phones work, other detecting ghost detecting devices don't work.
Whatnots don't work.
Yeah, whatnots are just not good there. They just don't work at all. But it seems that the spirits actually enjoy the encounters with the living at Myrtle's.
Okay.
All right, we're going to move on.
So
I will debunk at the end.
All right, okay.
I've built this out so we've got a climax, Renata. Okay. All right. I like to have a climax occasionally.
All right.
Do you remember what they are?
No.
Okay. Shut up and let me give you one.
All right.
Oh, no. Oh, right. Dear. Okay.
Get going.
Oh, no. I've lost my spot.
Look, it's right. There. William. It's right there.
Winter. Yeah. Right, now we're on to William Drew Winter. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned him, son-in-law of the Stirlings. So the story goes that he was shot in 1871. Now,
it's a painful place.
It's just a place. Well, I mean, it is, really. So he was shot at point blank range on the port. Now, the porch? The port. I'm thinking alcohol again. I've got the vodka in the port. I'm going to make a cocktail. So I'm going to read you the stories that I found.
Yes.
Right, okay. He retreated into the home and staggered up the stairs to eventually die in the arms of his wife. And don't you dare start looking through your papers. Heck. The sound of his strong and forceful stomp still linger in their home today as visitors report hearing heavy footsteps from empty staircases. Mm. There's actually a video on YouTube somewhere that somebody popped up of a possible ghost sighting on those stairs, and it looks like shadow legs walking past.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that it's a door closing somewhere where the light gets cut off. So, you know, when your light angle changes, it makes the shadows move.
Yep.
Because they've got the banister and the rails going up the banister. I'm sure that's what it is. But check it out. We might see if we can find that and put it up on the True Hauntings Facebook page as well. Now, there is a haunted mirror, according to hauntedwalks.com. One of the most disturbing paranormal reports occurs inside the home. In the grand hallway, there is an antique mirror just outside of the dining room. The visitors report seeing Woodruff's children appear in the mirror, those poor murdered little souls, near the room where they were poisoned. Oh, darlings. Mm. Our researcher noted that each time the mirror is replaced or resilvered, the same handprint reappears as if they refuse to be ignored.
Mm. That's sad.
Now, we do have some other ghost stories, right?
Yep.
We've got, of course, the piano that plays chords. I really couldn't find much on that either.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
apparently there's a piano that plays chords and mm-hmm. stops when you walk into the room.
Yeah.
There are some visitors that claim to see two small girls with blonde hair peeking through windows and appearing around bedsides.
Mm-hmm.
The girls are often heard and seen playing on the veranda that wraps around the home. Another amusing claim of ghostly activity is that somebody likes to mess up their beds. I'd be slapping that ghost if I've just made a bed, which is a rare occurrence to start with, and they go and ruffle up my bed. I would be having words. I would be getting that exorcism happening.
That's true.
And we all know how well they work. They say that the beds are messed up, but that another ghost, most likely a maid, follows behind this playful ghost to smooth out the wrinkles.
Oh.
So isn't that amazing? You can walk into your room and look at your bed and go, I bet that ghost ruffled my bed and then that other ghost smoothed it out. Because it doesn't look any different from when I left.
That's true.
That housemaid ghost is just wonderful.
Is there a chocolate on the bed there?
Now, that's the sort of ghost I'd keep. All right. Now, the other visitors to Myrtle's plantation have claimed to see Confederate soldiers throughout the property. One male apparition tells visitors to stay away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some other odd reports, and I tried really hard to find more information on these ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find it anywhere, and some of the things I typed in, I'm really sad that I did type it in because it brought up things that I really didn't want to look at.
We get desperate after a couple of hours.
Yeah. So a ballet dancer wearing a black tutu?
Oh,
why would there be a ballet dancer in a black tutu? Now, there is another one of a woman practicing voodoo and chanting.
Of course there would be, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm.
But the most logical. Interesting claim, and this is the one that I'm really sad that I tried to type this into Google, mm-hmm. was a beautiful naked Indian woman hanging around the gazebo. Do not type in beautiful naked Indian woman hanging around gazebo into your Google search engine, please.
You know what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
1,000 people.
Yeah, they will. Oh. Anyway. Now, there was another great photo that was popped up onto the website of Myrtle's. And it's of a young girl. Now, I did print it off, but now I can't find it. And they've got quite a description of the camera it was taken on and how they did it, and it's been sent away to experts. But it's a mother and a daughter, and then behind them they've got lace curtains. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at the lace curtains, it looks like the outline of a small child standing there. And it's really quite interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a little too interesting for just matrixing or pareidolia. 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 Get the doilies out. So, yeah, it's, I don't know, the details are just too much. It actually reminds me of the photo that I got of at Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
If they had been standing in front of a lace curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, so I will find that one and pop it up as well. And the photograph continues to travel the world, being thoroughly researched but still without explanation. They call it Ghost Girl. How's that for original? Now, they're Francis Kermeen Myers. Francis and James were only in their early 20s when they purchased the Myrtles. Did we mention them in the history?
No.
Didn't go that far. Okay, so this is a fairly recent owners. They've only just sold it not long ago to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So she wrote a book called The Myrtles Plantation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how's that for great? And she tells us some of the experiences that she had. So it's apparently they were just cruising by in a boat. They saw it and went, oh, let's buy that. It's for sale. They didn't know the story. They didn't know the history. They just bought it.
How do you do that?
With your pocket money, of course. We don't know about that sort of thing.
No.
Anyway. So they claim they knew nothing about the history of the house. She lived in the property for 10 years and documented her personal experiences, which basically seems to match what other people have said,
mm-hmm.
Including random footsteps on the stairs, lights that would go on and off without explanation, children crying, rattling doorknobs, and a presence where no human was in the vicinity. She also stated that a black woman in a green turban came toward her and that her hand actually passed through the ghostly figure, which caused it to fade away entirely. She reported that this was just one of 9 different ghosts, she says 9, that have been sighted on the property. During her time as the owner, she claimed that more than 1,000 reports were given to her from guests.
My goodness.
Yep, most similar to her own experiences, but a few others such as a bed floating off the ground.
Wow.
I want that room.
Yes.
Oh, have been reported. Now we move to the latest owners, which is Tita Moss, who is an Opelousa, not an Appaloosa, is it? Horse? Opelousa. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just step away from
so
that.
So she's a native of the area.
Right.
Right. And her husband, John Moss, own it, purchasing it from Francis and James. Now, they did know that Myrtles was haunted, though. I truly believe she thought when she was buying it, she thought it's just a marketing scheme to sell a haunted
mm-hmm.
plantation because it's going to bring people in. And it mm-hmm. does. It brings people from all around the world, including
sure
us.
Sure does.
So for the first 7 years, the couple and their 2 sons lived on the top floor of the mansion while the bottom continued to be a bed and breakfast for a traveling guest. Tita said that it was less than 2 weeks into their new life, she experienced her first taste of the supernatural when a ghost called out her name in her husband's voice.
Mm.
So we've got a bit of a mimic happening there. Her husband was not on the property at the time.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So her friend, she called in a friend, a supernatural expert, Mary Jo McKay, and explained that the spirits were welcoming her using a voice she was comfortable in hearing. Isn't that a lovely thing to do instead of frightening people saying, it's a demon imitating your husband?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's the spirits of the land welcoming you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mary Jo McKay. The next thing, the same thing occurred, but this time it was the voice of a childhood friend.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually she had an experience that she was very thankful, and she knew that she was being protected by the spirits of the Myrtles plantation. It was 1993. My youngest son, Morgan, was 10 and a half months old and in the care of his nanny, sleeping in an antique bed with iron railings. I was in my office typing the menu for the day for our restaurant. She said, in this Lauren Bacall raspy voice, I heard, "Check your baby." I disregarded it, thinking that my mind was playing tricks on me out of pure exhaustion, so I continued typing. "Check on your baby," the raspy voice said again. Then I knew I couldn't ignore it, so I went to Morgan's room, and sure enough, he wasn't there. I ran around the house yelling his name and finally heading out the front door to the brick courtyard. There he was, toddling toward the edge of the pond.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing? When I held him, so she went around, grabbed him and swooped him up. And so when I held him, a warm blanket enveloped the two of us. So really that I could feel the fabric and warmth.
Aww.
Then that voice, same voice, said to me, "You need not worry. Your family will never be harmed here."
Oh, isn't that lovely?
See, I bring the happy stories. She said that was a transformation for me, and I truly believe the spirits are angels here to protect us. Any time I ever encounter them is for a greater purpose.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Now, that came from apnews.com, that story. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great one.
Beautiful story.
Now, the big ghost hunting TV shows have been there.
Yes, they have.
And they've had amazing experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the Myrtles Plantation one with Ghost Adventures was actually quite a good episode. I think Zach gets possessed again. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've seen that one. But they've had Ghost Adventures there. They've had Ghost Hunters there. When Ghost Adventures was there, I think Zach wanted to get them to do some sort of voodoo ritual or something, and the lady of the house said, "Oh, no, I know nothing about that sort of stuff." It turns out she actually does teach voodoo. But you can understand that because that Zach is not a practitioner of voodoo and just willy-nilly asking for you to do some sort of ritual for the sake of TV.
Yeah.
If voodoo is your religion and sacred to you.
Mm-hmm. Very disrespectful.
Very disrespectful. So, yeah, but I understand why he's doing it as well. But they did find someone to do the ritual. But they had residual noises show up, like slamming a door, sounds, noises, a man in agony, a door rattling. They had equipment malfunction. As the door was rattling, the X cam stopped recording. Now, I own one of the SLS X cams, and I know if you don't press record on the actual screen, then it will automatically turn off.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have issues sometimes where it does shut down as well. Mine needs an overhaul. Bill, need your help. They had caught an apparition. The thermal imaging camera picked up a dark mass manifested at the other side of the chairs at the same time the door was rattling and the X-cam malfunctioned. Now, there was a bit of physical contact. This was back when Nick was on the show. As Nick turned away from the ball fell down the stairs on its own, hitting the X cam that happened to capture it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all rather cool.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the ghost hunters that go in, and that was back in the days when they had Brian Harknoy. Brian tended to whinge a little bit, bless him.
Mm-hmm.
He did. And they said that they had some experiences in there as well. Second floor, Grant and Jason investigated the staircase with thermal imaging cameras and immediately see a see-through green flash through the screen. So that could have been a flash outside that could have made the thermal camera arc up. In the gentleman's parlour, Brian sees something black move, and after Steve requests the entities make their presence known, they hear a noise. They had some EMF spikes as well, but they actually debunked that. They went out to the gazebo to try and find the Confederate soldier, but I bet it was the naked Indian lady they were looking for.
Yeah.
but they didn't actually get to get there because they got called back. But as they came back, they scanned past some bushes and caught some sort of shape, which they can't quite work out what it is, and they heard the sounds like someone was running away. So it could have been a human.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. They also explained that children who guests saw in the mirror are probably the result of matrixing, which I would probably agree, and that the smudging inside and outside of that glass combined with the metal tarnishing tend to form the image of a face or a hand. And I mean, if it depends what you're looking for. You're looking for a face or you're looking for a hand, you will see it.
Mm-hmm.
But they did leave saying it is one of the most haunted places in America.
Okay.
And then we found the other article.
Here we go.
All right, AmericanHauntingsInc.com. So the ghost stories actually started to kick off when the house was sold to Marjorie Munson in the 50s, and she was the chicken farmer. They started off fairly innocently, but then they started to sort of take on a life of their own, like Chinese whispers,
mm-hmm.
The story grows. Now, for starters, Woodruff, who was depicted as a mean, nasty, horrible person, apparently wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually madly in love with his wife, never remarried after she died,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, was heartbroken. And people just accept these stories as fact because it's been told so many times now. Now, as for the murders of Sarah and the two daughters, that's just been twisted out of proportion. Sarah was not murdered. She died from yellow fever. And her children, a son and daughter, although that records there's three children, wasn't there? I think there was three. There was definitely a son involved as well as two daughters. Did not die from a poisoned birthday cake. And that the timelines don't actually match up because when that supposedly happened, when that daughter was nine, Olivia wouldn't have existed. Mm-hmm. So it's like even chronologically, it could not have happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, who wants to get in the way of a great story?
That's true. I think they all died of yellow fever.
So he actually, Woodruff actually was not killed either. He died peacefully at his daughters and son-in-law's plantation in 1851. And the biggest problem of all is that there is no record of a Chloe existing ever. She just doesn't exist. She was not murdered or hung, as was claimed. But then again, you've got to look at the records of those times. Would records have been kept of this sort of thing? I think they did have to keep records of the slaves that they had bought and sold. This is out of our area of expertise, mm-hmm. So I'm sorry if we are saying something wrong here, but I think that they did have to keep some sort of record of slaves. They've spent hours scouring the Woodruff records, and there was just nothing. There was not a slave called Chloe or Cleo or any sort of version of that whatsoever. So how did that story get started? How did Chloe come into being as a ghost? And it all goes back to Marjorie Munson, who heard the local ghost stories, and she actually wondered if the house might be haunted. So she started to ask around and heard about legend of Chloe. Now, according to the granddaughter of Harrison and Fanny Williams, Lucille, her aunts used to talk about the ghost of an old woman who haunted the Myrtles and who wore a green bonnet. They often laughed about it and it became a family story. She has never given a name. In fact, the ghost with the green bonnet from the story was described as an older woman, never as a young slave, who might have been involved in an affair with the owners of the house. Regardless, someone repeated this story of the Williams family ghost to Marjorie Munson and soon penned a song about the ghost of Myrtles, a woman in a green beret.
Mm.
So it's
gone from a bonnet to a beret, now to a turban in the end.
Yeah, and it's also from an old woman to a young woman.
Yes.
Disfigured young woman. So as the story grew, the myrtles changed hands and people kept adding things onto it. And during the ownership of Arlen Deasy and Mr. and Mrs. Robert F. Ward, the story about the poison and the murders and the severed ear started to creep in. And it's just been passed on by word of mouth. There is no basis to it at all, which makes me really sad. So then the Myers get hold of the place. They were coming through on a riverboat, just decided to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
And they took it to the magazines, and the stories of the ghosts of Myrtle started to appear in magazines and books and received a warm reception from ghost enthusiasts throughout the world. The house appeared in November 1980 in an issue of Life magazine, and a book came out about the house. It's just taken these stories and turned it into a business.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So then the television crews started turning up as well, and the stories started to change a little bit. And then we had like the 10 or 11 murders on the property, but there is actually only one murder.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
That is documented.
Mm-hmm. And he was killed out on the front porch.
Yeah. And he actually died on the front porch.
Yes.
He got shot and he died on the spot. Whoever did it took off. They never actually got to work out
who did it.
Mm-hmm. So it's an unsolved murder to this day. They've got speculations that it was something to do with gambling debts or something like that, but nobody really knows.
Yeah. And the story is that he goes back into the house because of the haunting on the stairs.
Yeah.
Where they talk about him dying on the stairs in the arms of
the beloved wife.
The beloved wife.
Yep. Now, I actually read a lot of books when I was researching this. So the books I sort of took a look at was A Haunted History of Louisiana Plantations by Cheryl H. White and Ryan Smith, Haunted Louisiana by Sarah Ashley, Haunted Plantations of the South, Darren Gray. Now, that last one, I was a little bit mortified when I read the opening statement on that one, because it said, "History tells us at least 10 murders have occurred on the grounds, the most famous being the story of Chloe." History tells us.
Mm-hmm.
No, history does not tell us that at all, actually. If you look at the history, it says, no, there was one murder. How can you make a big sweeping statement like that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously no research has gone into that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
But it's printed and it's out there. Therefore, and there will be a lot of people that will pick up that book and go, oh, look at this. And it's not surprising that that happens. That happens a lot.
Yeah. Now, my final thoughts on this whole thing, I'm going. Because I said to you before, Renata, if we go, we'll find the ghost because we're special.
Mm-hmm.
Only special people can see the ghost.
That's right.
But the truth behind a lot of these ghost stories is the violence and the horror that was happening at the time. There were slaves that were treated poorly. There were slaves that were raped. There were slaves that were disfigured. There were slaves that were hung and no recording
mm-hmm.
made of it. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a hot pot, a conglomeration of, I should say a jambalaya, of the truth of the history of the location, which have then become ghost stories that are told.
Because mm-hmm. it's not good enough for an officer or the spirit of an officer to go past, or the ghost of a child to be seen, or something to happen without it being identifiable. It's like it's not a good enough story.
Mm.
You have to identify it and then embellish for people to go, oh, that's a really good ghost story.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, most of the times these spirits aren't identifiable.
Yeah.
They're random and they happen on occasion. And by giving them a name, it doesn't necessarily justify the place as being more haunted mm-hmm. because we've given this person or this spirit a name. It may have absolutely nothing to do or not be real, but yet there are other spirits there that people encounter, and obviously people do encounter spirits there because there's lots of stories, just not the ones that are made up.
Yeah. And people are making their experiences fit the stories that have been told.
Yeah.
They see something go past them out of the corner of their eye. Oh, that must have been Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't actually seen a green turban or a lady with a disfigurement. They've mm-hmm. just seen a shadow go, oh, that's Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they're feeding into it. But would it be haunted? I reckon it would.
I reckon it would, just because it is where it is. It's got a long history. Lots of death did occur at the house.
Yeah, a lot of sadness.
Lots of sadness. Turmoil around the area. Certainly it is a magnet.
Yeah.
But whether it's haunted by the spirits that it's known to have, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but I would definitely say there's something going on there, and we need to go and investigate, Renata.
And we shall.
And we shall. So thank you for joining us for this week's episode of True Hauntings Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. We need some of you beautiful people to leave some great reviews for us. If you're on iTunes, or you can even just go over to iTunes and leave a review for us, we would really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us on our True Hauntings Facebook page. I think it's a group. And also on our YouTube channel, we've got a great new YouTube little series going up called Anne and Renata's Misadventures.
Mm-hmm. So much fun.
If you want some laughs, head over there, subscribe to that, watch our videos, give them a thumbs up, and you'll have a ball, I swear. But ladies and gentlemen,
it's time.
See you on the dark side.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com. True Hauntings is a part of the Human Labs Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.